I want to stress the adjective sound resources. Just because a book has an imprimatur is no assurance that it contains sound teaching. First then, correct knowledge based on sound resources. Then deep knowledge that is commensurate with the ability of the religious to grasp what they are learning. The word deep, when applied to knowledge, is of course symbolic. We speak of water being deep. What do we mean by deep knowledge? Many possible things. The kind of knowledge that the human mind keeps exploring, and investigating, and always finds itself nourished, satisfied on the mysteries in which it believes. Adaptive knowledge that is adjusted to the different persons in a community and among communities to the different spiritualities and apostolates of the institutes. One community should concentrate on one kind of knowledge, another on another kind. It should then be adaptive knowledge, both aware of the kind of religious in the community and very conscious of the kind of community this is. Saying this, let me repeat. It is to be sound knowledge, deep knowledge, adaptive knowledge, but it has to be knowledge which belongs to the mind. A mind we should remember that is graced by the virtue of faith and gifted by the Holy Spirit with wisdom and understanding, with knowledge, and the supernatural ability to give oneself and others counsel in the ways of God. How much more emphatic could God be in emphasizing the primacy of the mind in having faith, which is the primary virtue of the supernatural life in the mind, and of the seven gifts of the Holy Spirit, making sure a square majority belonged to the mind. Wisdom, understanding, knowledge, and counsel. And as I just casually indicated, this counsel is not just for others. Oh, it is first for ourselves. In fact, distrust anyone who is not a good counselor to himself. Let us not be afraid of this mind. Just because we see so many people abusing this precious faculty, rather, let us trust that the Spirit promised by Christ will indeed teach our minds all truth. That is, all the truth we as religious need to meet the crisis of our age. We have one part left. I have saved protection for the end as one of the reasons for continued formation all through life. In fact, I would like to not speak only of continued formation, but continual formation, indeed continuous formation. Saving protection for the end was deliberate, because I consider it so persuasive, and being a spiritual salesman, I feel it's necessary to convince people. Persuasive reason for ensuring that religious be constantly educated in the religious life. Protection has to do with fear. And as Ignatius told us, when other motives fail, always bank on fear. What do I mean by protection? By this I mean that the communications age in which we are living projects so many ideas at variance with religious commitment, and even in contradiction to the Catholic faith that either religious or internally protected, and the word protected is not shielded. You are shielded from the outside. That's what a shield is. You know the pictures of knights in armor? But protection from within, either, I repeat, religious are internally protected against the encroachment, or if you wish, intrusion, or better still, invasion of these ideas, or they will become further casualties in the war of the evil spirit against the Spirit of Christ, which is being waged and in large parts of the world is being won by the evil spirit in our day. There are so many things that could be said about the importance of this inner protection, where the mind is thoroughly convinced that the will should continue giving itself. Otherwise, the allurement and seduction of these ideas that are alien to our commitment will invariably, and I might add infallibly, seduce us. Only God knows how many religious have succumbed to the kind of persuasive rhetoric that you can find in so many books, in so many recordings, so many articles, so many speakers. This past summer, after the retreat season for many religious was finished, I received a variety of letters and phone calls from major superiors asking for my reaction to certain things which their sisters had heard. Let me just mention one. By now embedded in scores of books, all I should add with imprimaturs, one particular community, drawing from several of its provinces, was told by a very sincere retreat master that the concept of sin in our age has radically changed. The change is especially in the meaning of grave sin. That theologians have now discovered what we should have known long ago, that grave sin does not consist in committing some grave fault against God. It consists in the deliberate rejection of God. So that, unless I intend to totally reject God, no matter what I do, I have not committed a grave sin. The provincial who inquired about this told me that one of her sisters had already proceeded to carry that principle into effect. Pathetically, the retreat master gave the retreatants the summary of a conference which he attended in his diocese, in which this new definition of mortal sin was taught. The conference presided by the bishop of the diocese. A brief epilogue. In the years to come, religious life will be strong where the superiors of communities have taken to heart the Church's teaching on the need for continued teaching of religious in the modern world. Religious today are being bombarded with ideas and attitudes that need to be sifted and strained. Religious must be able to distinguish truth from error. Otherwise, their very spirit of docility will make them the first victims of sin. seduction. Please God, what I have shared with you, you will take to heart. Thank you for listening.